Like I said, my name's Toby, and I'm an alcoholic. Tonight, I'm extremely pleased and excited to hear the speaker. He's someone I've known for about 8 years now. I consider him a friend. We've talked back and forth, both me talking with him and him talking with me. He's got quite a bit of experience in this program, as you will see, and he's actually just a fantastic guy. So I'd like to introduce to you Mr. Neil B.
Yeah, all right.
Thank you, Toby. I'm a recovered alcoholic. Name's Neil Britt. Start off saying I have a sponsor. Sponsor others, and I'm available to sponsor. Have a home group, Monday Night Madness, at 3333 at 7:30. It's a great meeting. Love it. Start off qualifying myself a little bit here. I was born in Orlando, Florida, to a loving family. You know, drinking was definitely accepted in my family. You know, they are definitely like to party, let's just say, you know. Getting a little nervous here, forgive me. I always get the jitters when I stand up here and see everybody's face, you know, so. You know, the drinking was a, I just remember growing up and like seeing my parents always going out, and like we would go to the beach and they would hang out with people, you know, friends and stuff and family, and they were always drinking, you know, and like I was thinking to myself, like, that's gonna be me. They just, like, they're having so much fun, and like, you know, that was my life, you know, that's why I looked forward to that, you know. I'll just go ahead and say, you know, I had some, I don't even know how to, you know, just wouldn't wish it on anybody, you know, stuff that happened to me when I was a kid, you know. I was molested as a child. You know, I don't know exactly how old I was, you know. Old enough that I was climbing trees. Let's just say I was, you know, hanging out in the trees then. I walked in on, I found my sister, when she attempted suicide at a really young age. And I'll say this, I say that because, you know, I used to think, that was always what was wrong with me. You know, those things really screwed me up, and that's what made me alcoholic. And come to find out later on, that's not what made me an alcoholic. I'll explain that later, but I will say that, you know, sure, I probably, you know, drank over those things, you know, and tried to drown that stuff, but, you know, at some point in my life, I crossed the line where it had nothing to do with any of that, you know. I'll just go ahead and, I'm probably going to bounce back and forth, but I took my first drink, probably was about 13, well, I was actually younger than that. I remember riding with my dad, and I was young. I don't even know how old I was. But he gave me a sip of his beer, and I thought it was disgusting. And he gave me some of his Redman chew. And I thought that tasted like raisins. I actually liked that more than the beer. But I know, right? But my first experience getting drunk, I think I was somewhere around 13 or 14. And you know, be honest with you, it was fun. You know, I got drunk, but you know, I hear people talk about, like, oh, they, you know, they saw the light, and that just wasn't my experience. You know, like, I enjoyed it. I wanted to do it again, but it wasn't. You know, until a little bit later on that I experienced something in a alcohol in a pill form. I'll just say, you know, and it really wasn't that much long after. I will say that, you know, it wasn't shortly after I drank, I found out, you know, my dad was smoking pot and stuff, and I was like, I was a dare kid. I don't know if you guys remember any of that, but, you know, I was like, when I found out my dad was smoking pot, I thought my life was going to end. You know what I mean? Like, I just thought it was, like, the worst thing ever, and then I think, like, 3 days later, I was stealing it from him. So, So fast forward, you know, I the alcohol on the pill form literally is exactly what I said. I don't know if you, it was similar to a Xanax, I'll just say, and it's like drinking like six beers, you know, like that, you know, and I remember that night, that was when I had that experience of like, holy cow, this is what I'm going to do the rest of my life. I don't want to do anything else. You know, like, this is awesome. Not a care in the world, you know, like, and I was getting in all kinds of trouble and I just did not care. You know what I mean? I was just having a blast and I didn't, you know, I guess, you know, we talk about, you know, being in the moment and stuff, you know, and that experience, I could actually say, you know, I was able to experience living in the moment at that moment, if that made any sense. But, you know, so I'll go ahead and speed up. You know, that stuff started to take a, almost immediately, all, you know, everything, drinking and smoking pot and just, you know, just doing all kinds of crazy stuff, started to take a really large part of my life. You know, my grades started to drop. And you know, I knew I wasn't being too smart. You know, I was messing with stuff that I probably shouldn't have been messing with. So my dad threw out the idea that, you know, how would you like to go to military school? And I was like, sure, you know, why not? You know, so I moved to Melbourne and, went to military school there and did awesome. Absolutely loved it. Loved the discipline, loved the physical exercise, just did really, really well, you know, like for a period of time. And I wasn't doing anything, I wasn't drinking, you know, I was removed from all that stuff. And for whatever reason, I found that group of people eventually that was, you know, the people that I like hanging out with, you know. My sponsor always says like attracts like, and you know how true that is, you know, like I, looking back at my life, you know, like I always seemed to find that group of people, you know. It didn't matter where I was, I always seemed to steer off to that group of people, and it was always oh, I'm, you know, wrong place or wrong time or something like that. And it's crazy. But so I found that group of people at military school, and you know, and just again, you know, like that stuff took precedent over everything, you know. And I ended up getting in fights, and you know, and just actually got kicked out of military school. It's kind of funny. I just, you know, just kind of rebelled, I guess, you know. And like so when I got kicked out, my parents were just like, you know, what are we going to do? What are we going to do with him? You know, he's like, I was completely out of control, basically, just kind of defiant of, you know, and it was everybody else's fault. It was my parents' fault. You know, it was never had anything to do with, you know, with me. And so, you know, they shipped me off to my family up in Kentucky, and I lived up there for a while. And, you know, everything was good once I was moved away from that. You know, I did well, you know, still drinking occasionally. Moved back, you know, because Neil was okay, Neil's doing good. And I moved back, and you know, it's right back. You know, once I got back, I was back again hanging out with the same crew and doing the same thing, you know. And you know, I'm missing. I know I'm missing a bunch of stuff, but I'll just say, you know, I was arrested, you know, several times. You know, first time I was arrested, this really has nothing to do with, well, kind of does, but not really. I was just the kind of group of people. I was arrested at 13, and I caught like five felonies, and I had absolutely no clue. I remember I was just like, oh, we got arrested, cool. You know, I thought it was cool. You know, and like. And shortly after that, I was arrested for drinking beer at a church, sitting on a church bench. Just a cop pulls up for drinking beer, you know, just openly, just just poor parents, you know. But so I you know, I moved back and you know, just got, you know, when I was in military school, I was hanging out with a crew that, you know, like to go to like the underground clubs, the rave scene or whatever, and so you know, I was very involved with that, and just, you know, like, I was basically, my life consisted of sleeping all day and staying up all night and, you know, and partying, and I was 16, you know, like, and so when I got back, I actually went back to school, and, you know, obviously, you know, school was not that important to me, you know, but at some point or another, you know, I was trying to control stuff, and I was managing to do that, and I ended up, you know, I think it was my senior year, I ended up dropping out of high school with 2 credits left and got my GED, you know. Just stupid stuff, you know, and it was basically just because I wasn't, you know, that lifestyle took, you know, it was more important. It was more important. I just, you know, just had no clue. And so, going to speed up a little bit, you know, I started working for my dad. and, you know, life was good. You know, I'll be honest with you, life was great. I was able to maintain a job. You know, that was something that I never really had an issue with, you know, was going to work. I didn't mind going to work. I enjoyed it. You know, I was making money, and I would go out, you know, after work, and I would drink, and I would party, and I was able to do that, you know. And, like, I remember I worked at there's a lumber yard, and I worked on the counter, and, like, one of the customers would come up to me, and I guess, you know, some of the mornings I would come in, and I'd just reek a beer, you know, just completely stink, you know, and I would shake, you know, and she came up to me, and she's like, you need to slow down. And I was thinking to myself, why? You know, like, why? Doesn't everybody do this at this age, you know? Like, it didn't dawn on me, like, you know, guys my age were actually going to college and, you know, doing stuff with their lives. And, you know, not to say that I wasn't, you know, I was being responsible. I was going to work, you know, I was still able to get up and go to work and all that stuff. I just, you know, and it just never dawned on me, you know. And so eventually I was hanging out with this guy, and, you know, he introduced me to something, you know, it was very similar. It's Oxycontin, I was going to say it. You know, drugs are a big part of my story, and it is what it is, but alcohol also was, you know, and to me, it's all the same, you know. But I'll, for the respect of the traditions, I'll do my best to not talk about it as much. But I'll just go ahead and say, you know, I started doing that, and that was my first experience of experiencing, like, extreme pain. I didn't know that came with it afterwards. It really brought me to that, you know, crossing that line that I was talking about, you know. So I started doing that, and, you know, slowly but surely, you know, I was doing it, you know, on a daily basis, hourly basis. And I didn't know anything about withdrawals or anything like that, you know, up until the point, the night that I actually experienced it, and it was probably the worst thing ever. I just remember being up all night, and, like, you know, well, it started off, I had been arrested for a DUI, and got a, you know, was on probation, and I remember I was coming from the probation office, not too smart, right? I'm sitting here doing all this stuff, and, you know, just left the probation officer, but I'd run out, and I started experiencing, you know, got diarrhea, started with that, you know, and just, you know, at night, you know, that night was just absolute misery, you know, like, I just remember, I was like, damn, what is wrong with me? I couldn't sleep, and sweats and stuff, and it was the worst pain I've ever experienced. And so, you know, And so when and then I got some more, and then I realized that if I had more, I'd feel okay. You know, it would take away. So again, the vicious cycle here. You know, so like I started doing that. You know, and man, my mind's bouncing around just on different things. But like, I remember at one point I didn't have anything, and I was at that point. This is a period of time in my life where I realized that I'd lost all control. Because I remember, like, I didn't have any of that stuff, and I was willing to do whatever. So, like, a friend of mine had some other substances, and I started doing those rather than kind of keep you up all night. and I just did a bunch of it, you know. I ended up, I was selling my stuff. I used to DJ, and I sold my turntables and all my records and stuff to my friend, or so-called friend, we'll just say. And I stayed up, you know, for like 3 or 4 days, and my dad's a manager, who's basically like a, you know, an older brother to me. He came into the house, you know, and just was, knocking on the door, and I was just out of my mind, and I was seeing people that weren't there, you know, I remember the look on his eyes, man. I'll just never forget it. You know, he's just like, "You're gonna fucking die." You know, he's like, "What is wrong with you?" He's like, "We thought you were dead." You know, and man, I just, you know, it didn't hit me then. You know, it did now. You know, it's I'm able to see it now, but you know, at that moment, I just wasn't able to see it. You know, it was just like whatever. So, another trip back to Kentucky to we'll cure Neil. So I go back to Kentucky, doing the same stuff. Everything's good, you know. I remove myself from all that stuff, go through the withdrawals, and come back. And I think it was like a day or two later. I'm you know, once I'm back in Orlando, I'm right back. You know, I get what I want. You know, and my day, it was crazy. My dad opened up the cigarette pack, just so happened, and just like, what the, you know, what's going on, man? He's like, what's wrong with you? You know, and I don't know. I didn't know. I think that's like what it talks about in the big book. You know, it's like, you know, if he's honest with himself, he has no clue why he did it. You know, I'm not good at reciting the big book, but basically, you know, I didn't know why. I didn't have any clue why either. You know, I knew that, like, where it took me and what I was doing, and I was hurting the people around me, and I had absolutely no reason. Didn't make any sense. It made absolutely no sense, other than I was crazy. So, you know, he's like, you know, why don't you go to treatment? So he decided, you know, yep, that's a great idea. I'll go to treatment. So I went to treatment, and this was back in 2003 or 2004. And, you know, I went 90 days, you know, what was it? 2003, 2004. Okay. I went there 90 days and I had absolutely no intention on quitting drinking. You know, like I said, my family drank, you know, and they drank hard. And I just could not picture my life without alcohol. You know, I just could not picture, like, it was going to be a boring life. Like, no way, I'm not going to do it. I didn't tell them that, you know, I just kept that quiet because I heard everybody talking, oh, you got to quit drinking, you got to quit, you know, everything. And I was just like, well, I'm not telling them that. I'll quit, you know, doing this stuff. But so it was funny. It was like, you know, my 90 days was coming up, and I remember I had like my one-on-one, my therapist, and she's sitting down and she's like, you know, just business as usual. And I'm like, you know, my 90 days is up, right? And she's like, oh yeah. And I'm like, I'm ready to go. You know, and so I went. She let me coin out or whatever, and you know, I went home, and it's crazy. I remember, you know, after being separated from alcohol and everything for like 90 days, and like I went home, and I remember I had like some of this stuff in one of my boxes at home, and I remember like opening up or just like fighting with myself. Like I knew it was there. in my room, in this box, and like I was walking back and forth, pacing, and I'm like, I don't want to do this. I don't want to do this. But I did. You know, it was just, it's the weirdest damn thing. I'm sure you guys understand what I'm talking about, but like, it had me, you know, and like, so I did. I caved in, and I think it was literally like a month later, I was back in treatment. I had stole medication from, you know, basically the guy I grew up across the street, my best friend's grandfather, who was dying from cancer. I had attempted suicide. And again, you know, it's like, you know, you think these things, like, that's horrible, you know, that stuff, you know, all that stuff is really, really bad. You know, you think that would be enough for somebody to quit, you know, and it's just, the list goes on, you know, like, for the next, well, my sobriety date is January 17, 2011, yes. Sorry, I just celebrated. So there you go. That's my story, you know, for the next, you know, however many years that is. You know, it's like I would go to treatment. I would do really, really good in treatment. But I was never willing to accept the stuff that's outlined in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. I just wasn't willing to do it, you know. I would always end up, again, like attracts like. I would always end up hanging out with that group of people in treatment that, you know, aren't here today, you know. I'll speed up a little bit, you know. I'll speed up to my last drunk, and, you know, I'll say that, you know, I met a girl in the program who wasn't sober, had a kid with her. Which is a blessing today, you know, absolute blessing. I love her to death. And I'll bounce back a little bit to some of this stuff, but so my last drunk, you know, I got to a point, you know, this past time where it was like, you know, yeah, I accepted that I was an alcoholic. And a drug addict or whatever, you know, I suffer from this, you know, and I just thought that this wasn't going to work for me, you know, so I was just like, you know, this is what's going to happen. I'm just going to do this, and then this is how it's going to be. I'm going to continue doing what I'm doing because this doesn't work for me. When the truth is I never really gave this a shot, you know. I never did this program to the best of my ability. So I was on a Suboxone, you know, for a year or whatever, and it's basically, if you guys don't know what it is, it's basically like methadone, you know, pretty much the same thing, but, and, you know, I thought that if I did that, then I could, you know, just do this stuff whenever I want, the other stuff, you know, drink, I could do whatever, you know, this would cure me. I could still have fun, and truth was, it was no fun anymore. You know, like it sucked. My life sucked. It did. So I did that for a year, and my last drunk was, you know, I was living at my parents' house. You know, and the last 2 weeks before I got sober, actually probably the last month, I just, you know, shit just got crazy. I was doing stuff that, you know, I thought I'd never do, you know. I had lost, I was like 50 pounds underweight, so I can totally relate with Bill's story, you know, where he's talking about where he's 50 pounds underweight. I weighed like 145 pounds, I think, when I came in. So I was just doing all kinds of stuff, and finally I was just like, Dad, can I come home? I don't want to be here anymore. It was Tampa was the problem, you know. So I go back home, and I still, you know, I know people back in Orlando. I can go anywhere in this country, and I promise you, if I don't have a solution in my life, I will find one, you know. So my last drunk, I again started messing with those substances that keep you up all night, you know, and was doing all kinds of other stuff, and I don't know what happened. You know, I remember my dad coming in. He's just like, you know, what, again, you know, what the hell is wrong with you? You know, like, I'd fell out, you know, and my, busted my eye open, and he's just like, you're messed up again. Like, he didn't know, like, I was already messed up for, like, the past year, but how am I doing on time? Okay. Wow. Let me get sober here. So I ran out, basically. I ran out that night, and I just, you know, I'm not good at asking for help, you know, or at least I was, and I'm still working on it. You know, I'm better than I was today, but, like, I just didn't want to live anymore. Sorry, jeez. I didn't want to live anymore, and so I decided that I was going to try and attempt suicide again, you know, and I don't know if I was serious. I don't know. I just know that I was in a lot of pain that night, you know, because it, I think about it today and it's like, you know, well, if you're really serious, you probably would have done it, you know what I mean? But, like, I know it's not a joking matter, but, you know, regardless, the truth of it is that I didn't know how to ask for help, and that was basically what happened. And I ended up getting Baker acted that night. My daughter was in the house with me when it happened, and DCF got involved and took my daughter away from me. And, you know, I just can relate so much with the big book, you know, when they talk about from one more trip to the sanitarium or the treatments, you know, it's basically the same thing, you know, because that was my life, you know. I was in and out of treatment centers and in and out of, you know, hospitals and detoxes and, you know, and I just thought I was it, you know. I hated the person I had become, you know. I didn't like the person I was, you know. I can promise you this, like, you know, and Warren, I don't know if this happened, I'm sure they did, but, like, when I was in third grade, they asked me, like, what I wanted to be, you know, when you grow up, and I was like, you know, all the kids were like, oh, doctor, you know, astronaut, whatever. I don't even remember what I, you know, said, but I guarantee you it wasn't that, you know, what I had become. I promise you that, you know. And yeah, you know, it was like my parents were like, you know, up and we don't know what to do. And, you know, I was just like, you know, try it again, trying it sober again. Ooh, getting choked up, sorry. I moved into a halfway house. You know, I knew that treatment centers, you know, aren't going to fix me. I knew where the solution was. And it was in his rooms because everybody seemed happy. You know, I just honestly didn't think it. You know, I thought I was that guy. You know, that the one that it just wasn't for me. I just didn't think it was gonna work for me. You know, but honestly, I didn't have any other choices. You know, I was done. I'd lost my daughter. I say this is that, you know, I burned my hand a couple months ago, or actually it was longer than that. I don't know how long, it was a couple, 3 months ago, whatever. And I got like third degree burns or whatever on my hand, and, you know, you hear that story in the big book where they're talking about, you know, burning hand on the stove. I promise you that, like, I looked at that glue gun with a different perspective. Like, I you know, thing burned the crap out of me. And, you know, like, it just blows my mind that the stuff that I did, you know. I was riding with my daughter one time, picking her up from daycare, and just all out of my mind, picked her up and got into a car accident with her. Total messed up. You know, the attempted suicide with her in the house and stuff like that, you know, and it blows my mind where this stuff took me. You know what I mean? And you know, even going back, you know, with stealing from the guy that, you know, that was my friend's grandfather, you know, who was dying, who did die. He died, you know, and you think that would have been sufficient enough for somebody, for me, like, to quit. And it is for certain people, but not for me, you know, because I suffer from a disease of alcoholism. You know, so anyways, I'm getting sober here. So I moved into a halfway house and here in Tampa, and I remember going to this meeting, Monday Night Madness, as a matter of fact, and hearing somebody say something that, you know, he was sharing one night, and I actually had him sponsor me for, like, you know, just a little bit, and just was, you know, wasn't sober, just say that. And but he said something that night that struck a chord with me, and for whatever reason I picked up that phone and called him, and he told me to come up to the, you know, come back up to the club that night and to pick up a white chip. And you know, that was that night, you know, is unbelievable. You know, like, I just remember, like, you know, just feeling so grateful that I was, you know, because I was stripped of everything. I didn't have anything else, but I had the love of this fellowship, man. This group of people just blew my mind. You know, like, he took me on that night, and we talked, and he basically, you know, told me that, you know, this is exactly what he told me. As a matter of fact, he's like, if you want what I have, you'll do what I do. And I wanted what he had, you know, because he was happy, and he had a purposeful life, you know. And he's not one of these guys that, you know, would come into the meetings and, like, just sit there and talk and then go out and do something different. Like, I actually have seen him outside of AA and do and live a good life and be honest, and, you know, and just all those things that I wanted when I was in third grade. You know, that's what I wanted. I wanted to be that person. You know, I didn't care about, you know, I just wanted to, I knew where my heart was, you know, and, like, and so I did. I you know, he had me chairing meetings at 90 days. You know, we went through the big book paragraph by paragraph, word for word, you know, and he would stop, and I was just like, please, can we get through the steps? He's a talker, by the way. But, I got to experience some stuff with this guy. You know, we, you know, one of my big issues with, you know, was with, you know, the whole, I never had issues with God. I never really did, other than the fact that I was always focusing on the negative stuff that was going on in religions and all that stuff, you know. And there's a part in the big book where it talks about, you know, how we, you know, how we miss the beauty of the forest, because we focused on some of the ugliness of the trees or whatever. You know, and I that was me. I did. I focused on that stuff, you know. And if there was a God out there, he damn sure didn't like me, because look at my life and look how shitty it is. And you know, I was able to talk about this stuff with him and stuff like that. And you know, his significant other also plays a huge part in my, you know, sobriety too. I was at a meeting one night, and she had said something to me, and she had talked about how she struggled with God and all this stuff, and, like, and she said something that, you know, just I started putting into action right away. It was like, you know, she said she started keeping an open mind about things and started listening to everybody else's spiritual experience and tried to apply it in her life, or just look for those stuff and stuff like that. And so I started doing that, you know. And we went up to it's gonna be crazy. This is completely not me. So, like, we went up to New York and we did this, like, whole spiritual retreat thing, I'll just say. And, like, it was crazy. It was, you know, I sat and I meditated for, like, 6 hours that day, and It was just an amazing experience, you know. It was a turning point in my life, you know. Like, I don't know what happened to me up there, but something happened to me, and it changed my perspective on life. It did. And we, you know, we got to go to Bill Wilson's house and Stepping Stones in New York, and just, you know. Just, it was just the whole experience, and I don't know, something happened to me up there where I fell in love with this program. Like, I've never fallen in love with it before, you know. started getting involved in service work. You know, I just followed his directions. I just followed everything that he said because I didn't want to be the person that I was before, you know. And so I'll just, you know, tell you what my life's like now. I've been through the steps, and again, like, I try to give this back as much as possible. You know, I have a God in my life today that, you know, that I know is there. I know. I just know without a doubt. And he shows himself to me on a pretty regular basis. I have a, you know, this program has given me so much. It just has. It's an awesome, awesome relationship, you know, that I just never thought was possible. You know, I have my daughter back. In my life, you know, it's just, and, you know, there's just so much that, like, again, like, if you would have asked me the day that I walked in here, that, like, where I would be right now, like, I would just be like, no way, you know, no way. I would have sold myself short big time if you had asked me, you know, just, get to, you know, experiencing things with, you know, my girlfriend, you know, praying together and just doing stuff that just is just completely, you know, just it's just different for me, you know, and it's awesome, you know, it really is. It's this life is, it's way it is. It's a way of life, you know, that works, and it says that in there, and I believe it. It's the answer to all my problems. It is, you know, if I'm ever feeling squirrely or whatever, or just something's wrong, you know, I have the solution right there in the big book in the 12 steps. It's just always there, and I just got to put it into action. I just got to follow up with footwork. That's it, you know. So, with that, thanks for having me speak.
Neil B.